Well, we were waiting today to hear whether the Supreme Court would consider any cases involving same-sex marriage or the Defense of Marriage Act. So far, the court is declining to take up those cases, but today it granted review of six others and issued one ruling this morning upholding West Virginia's congressional redistricting plan. So what else is on the docket? The session starts next Monday, and with the rulings today, we thought we'd bring in Adam Tack, who covers the Supreme Court for the New York Times. Adam, were you surprised the court didn't grant a same-sex marriage case today?
No, I think the thinking around the courthouse was that they have to get all of their ducks in a row. There are five different cases that are in various stages of getting their petitions to be heard, briefed. And I would think it very likely in November that they take at least one case challenging the Defense of Marriage Act. The harder question is whether they also take that case out of California, which seeks to get a constitutional right to same-sex marriage, the so-called Prop 8 case that David Boies and Ted Olson filed. But they'll take a marriage case this year, almost certainly.
Yeah, and they may take that challenge to Prop 8, as you said. Well, are there other big issues on the court could decide in this new term and have not picked yet?
The one they haven't picked yet that's also likely to arrive concerns the Voting Rights Act of 1965, you know, one of the landmark achievements of the civil rights era, which the court has indicated may be past its prime in a 2009 decision and seems eager to have another look at. And it comes up again and again in these various voting rights challenges, including voter ID and early voting laws and so on, about whether some parts of the country, but only some parts, have to come to the federal government in Washington and get federal approval before they can change their election laws. So a Voting Rights Act case is quite likely. And then, of course, already on the docket to be heard October 10th is a big affirmative action case.
Right. Let's talk about that. What is each side saying in that?
So this is a case where a white woman rejected from the University of Texas sues claiming that her race was held against her.
This is Abigail Fisher.
Correct. Yeah. Only 9 years ago, the Supreme Court laid out a kind of compromise saying that public institutions of higher education cannot impose quotas or use numerical systems that give a point-based boost to particular groups, but could take race account of race as one factor among many in the kind of holistic review process that we've all gotten used to. Since then, though, and that was a 5-4 decision written by Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. Since then, though, the personnel on the court has shifted, and there's some reason to think that that compromise is going to be undone in this new case, Fisher v. University of Texas.
Because the university is arguing it did have this right to consider race as one factor among many in its admissions policy. So this is kind of a challenge to a past ruling.
That's right. It may be that the court actually reverses course only 9 years later. It may also be that it tweaks things. Texas has this interesting dual system where it takes about 3/4 of its students under a so-called top 10 system. If you graduate in the top 10% of any Texas high school, whether it's a good high school or bad high school, you will automatically be admitted to the University of Texas. And then it layers this holistic admission process on top of that. And it may be that the court says if you're already getting quite good diversity, and Texas does get very substantial diversity using the top 10 program, then you're not allowed to classify people by race for that last increment of additional diversity.
Yeah. Let's get another case in before the break. This one involves the dogs, the drug-sniffing dogs from Florida, Frankie and what's the other one? Aldo. What is this?
This is a great question. The court has been looking at all kinds of Fourth Amendment cases using all kinds of fancy technology, and now it's looking at an old technology. Can a dog come right up to your doorstep and sniff for drugs? The court has earlier said that if you carry drugs in public, you know, in the airport or something, the dog sniffs those drugs, you don't have a Fourth Amendment right against that kind of search. But the home is special. The home is the castle, is the sanctum, and the court has been quite protective of the home. So the basic issue in the case is, can you use this old technology of a drug-sniffing dog and walk right up to my doorstep and sniff for marijuana or whatever?
And isn't there another case from Florida about whether or not a dog can search a vehicle? Or can there be a search of a vehicle after a dog thinks it detects illegal contraband?
Yeah, the other case concerns how, you know, what level of expertise the dog has to have, whether you need to have a particularly well-trained dog before it triggers probable cause to allow a further search.
One can only hope that the dogs will be present in the courtroom when this is happening. That's Adam Luktak.
From the journalist's perspective, that would be fantastic.
Right. Adam covers the Supreme Court for the New York Times. As we just heard, two cases are on the docket involving drug-sniffing dogs, and in one case, how good they are at it. But there's so much else on the docket and so much else that the court might pick for the session that just starts Monday. Unbelievable that a new session's already upon us. So we're going to take up those after a break. Adam Luktak, stay right there. Be back in about a minute here and now. Welcome back to our conversation with Adam Luktak of the New York Times, who covers the Supreme Court for that paper. We're talking to him about the new session, which just starts Monday. It just, one of the signs of fall, the Supreme Court back in session. We're talking about the cases that are on the docket and those that might be. And Adam, let's just stay with those on the docket. There are two involving the death penalty. What's at issue there?
The Supreme Court is really dealing with conflicting impulses it has. On the one hand, it doesn't like federal courts reviewing state court death penalty judgments. It thinks that the federal courts can be too intrusive. On the other hand, it hates it when the lawyers assigned to capital defendants do a lousy job, as they more than infrequently do. And so these cases present the question of, when you get to federal court, how fast do you need to present your evidence that your initial trial lawyer was a bad lawyer, and what are the settings in which you can present that evidence? It gets fairly technical fairly fast, but right. it's dueling impulses the court's trying to sort out.
Well, whether death row inmates who've been found incompetent are entitled for a stay of federal proceedings. So, you know, there's a question of, is that a question of, should these lawyers have proven them incompetent?
Well, so that case concerns someone who becomes incompetent later, and these are just wrinkles upon wrinkles.
Yeah.
But you have bad lawyers, you have mentally incompetent defendants either at the time of trial or at the time they're trying to present evidence that their lawyer was incompetent, and the court's trying to sort through those issues.
Right, as death row issues. But there's also an interesting case that would seem to fall under a human rights banner. Tell us about this one involving Royal Dutch Petroleum.
This is a case brought by 12 Nigerians against a Dutch oil company for complicity, they say, in human rights abuses in Nigeria. And it was already argued once before the Supreme Court on the question of, can you sue a corporation under a 1789 law called the Alien Tort Statute? So it sounded a little like Citizens United. Mm-hmm. Are corporations immune from this kind of suit? The court didn't want to answer that question and instead set the case down for re-argument on Monday on a much broader question of, can American courts hear these cases at all? So if a foreign plaintiff is suing a foreign defendant over conduct that took place abroad, even if it violates international human rights norms, the court is asking the question of, can you come to a U.S. court to have that case adjudicated?
Okay, so if somebody suffered severe human rights abuses abroad, can they then bring that suit to the U.S.?
Exactly right.
Yeah, okay. A little more on what the Supreme Court did rule today. This is the West Virginia redistricting case. Now, the justices ruled against a challenge to the redistricting. By the way, program note, we're going to be talking to former Congressman Mickey Edwards about changing the election system. And one of the things he really wants to see is redistricting changed. He says both parties use redistricting to strengthen their hand. But what was the challenge in Virginia and what does the – I'm sorry, in West Virginia, and what does the court's ruling today mean?
So the Supreme Court has said for many decades now that a fundamental constitutional principle is one person, one vote. And to make that happen, congressional districts in a state like West Virginia need to be pretty close to exactly the same size. And West Virginia has three districts. After the 2010 census, people had moved around some, so they had to redraw the district lines. And the question for the Supreme Court was, did you have to make them perfectly, exactly equal, or was a 5,000-person disparity tolerable? And the Supreme Court said, you know what, that's less than a percentage point. This way they could preserve county lines, didn't have to put two incumbents in the same district, and that level of disparity was okay, even though we now have very sophisticated computer mapping technologies that would allow you to have essentially perfect equivalence.
Well, what were the challengers claiming? What was their complaint about the imperfection?
Well, their basic complaint was one person, one vote means one person, one vote, and I shouldn't have slightly more voting power than my neighbor across the district line. And in general, the Supreme Court is on board for that proposition. They just don't think you need perfect equality.
Okay. Just we got one last case on the docket that comes to us, and then maybe you have a couple you want to throw out. But there seems to be a case about the government and flooding.
Yes, it's one of a series of property rights cases where the question is, does the government have to pay you money under eminent domain principles if they, in essence, take your property, and what amounts to a complete taking of property?
Okay. Well, Adam Lichtai, as we said, the Supreme Court starts its new session this Monday. What else, by the way, is there something else you want to tick off, laundry list maybe, of the things you're looking for?
They took a case just today, which is very interesting, about whether if you're arrested for drunk driving, won't take a breathalyzer test, does a police officer have to get a warrant before forcing you to take a blood test?
This is a Missouri case.
That's right. And that resonates a little like a case the court is quite likely to take, because it's already entered a stay in it, about whether someone arrested but not yet convicted can have DNA evidence taken from them. So in both of these cases, there's this question of whether the government is allowed to intrude into your body without a court order.
And what happened in Missouri, just to wrap this up, is that the state Supreme Court there sided with the defendant in that case, the person who was allegedly an unwilling drunk driving suspect, and they said the police in most cases do have to have a warrant to take a suspect's blood there. Have other states ruled on that?
The states are all over the map on this and really go in two different directions. Some of them say, listen, blood alcohol dissipates over time and you got to move fast and there's not time enough necessarily to get a warrant. Other states say, yes, but sometimes there is and we shouldn't do this lightly. And if there is time and if you're not leaving an accident scene or something and you don't have to investigate other stuff but you're merely taking somebody 5 minutes to the hospital, then you should get a warrant and you can do that over the phone. So there's a real split among the states on this.
Adam Lichtai, again, covers the Supreme Court for the New York Times, helping us look at the new session coming up on Monday. Adam, thanks as always.
Great to be here, Robin.
Okay. We're going to take a break. Latest news is coming up, but then after that, that play. The Supreme Court should weigh in on that play, the Wisconsin-Seattle thing. What was that? Well, it was an interception, right? So why was it ruled a touchdown? We'll weigh in with Sports Illustrated. And will the angst over this call finally maybe move the stalemate over referees in the NFL? That's coming up, too. Back soon, here and now.